today, there's mad owners, there's bad owners, and there's Enrico Preziosi owners. The man with bags of cash and easy trigger finger, the man at the heart of Genoa's biggest ever scandal, who's now getting involved in Genoa's second biggest ever scandal, La Madre di Tutte le Porcate. His story coming up in Golazzo. And a big buongiorno to you, listener. Thanks for joining us here on Golazzo. We're joined, as ever, by James Horncastle.
Ciao tutti.
And also Gabriele Marcotti.
Well, you know how I was all cheery last week?
Oh, no.
And positive?
Gab, are you a fan of Preziosi?
No, it's funny. When I try to make the unholy trinity of the worst possible people in Italian football, worst possible owners.
Okay, so which club are they going to join?
See the first name on the team sheet, Gab?
It's hard.
So you're gonna you have a club for them to work at. Which one's that?
Chievo.
Chievo?
No. Oh, like my all-time nightmare. No, yeah. But it's funny. The Chievo guy wouldn't even be in the top three unholy trinity.
Really? I mean, where would Preziosi be? He's top three, I imagine.
Yeah. Campidelli's been attempting to get into the magic circle, but so far hasn't broken in.
So of your
Cellino when he was there, obviously, and
Preziosi's worse than
Girardi.
Preziosi's worse. Girardi's in a class. I mean. But it's hard because there's people like Girardi who, you know, just did so much damage in such a wanton, stupid way. In some ways, Preziosi is more offensive.
Yeah.
Because A, he's been around for so long.
Uh-huh.
B, he's managed to reinvent himself after, like, he gets busted and, like, it's all inconsequential and he comes back. And
so
then
Preziosi, basically, he was the owner of Como, who he took up and then got relegated again, and then they went bankrupt, and he was then suspended for basically wrong behaviour.
Yeah, I think they were, 60 million euro.
He basically
in the
drove
red.
Them into the ground.
And he did have Messi on trial, or did he?
Or did he? And then he reemerges a couple of years later as the owner of Genoa, and that's when the fun really begins. I mean, we'll go into that, but
the fun is all along, because, of course, we should explain what this guy's family business is.
Mm-hmm.
So he owns a company called Giochi Preziosi, which is a toy company, where you would think, oh, how sweet. It's a family business where they make toys for the little children to play with, right? No, that's not what they do. They license cheap tat from dubious places, and they go and they flood the market with it with their disgustingly tacky ads. And
Gormiti.
Anyway. Yeah, there's nothing sweet about the nice toy man. Like, that's not what he is.
Enrico Preziosi, the man who got Genoa relegated to Serie C1 for match fixing, amongst other excitements. To fully tell this story, we need to go back before the toys, before the Como, all the way to the 1920s. That's right, listener. It's 1924. Top of the morning to you. Fascism is the new sensation sweeping the nation. How times change, eh? And Italian football is divided in two. There's a North Division and a South one. The South one's so poor that basically the title is given to the winners of a playoff between the two, but sometimes they don't even bother having it because it's
the Lega Nord.
Yeah, essentially. It's such a formality. Anyway, we've landed in the 1924-25 season, which has ended with the top two teams in the North facing each other before going on to the final. And, of course, one of them is Genoa because they are absolutely the dominant team in that era. They won 9 titles. They're facing Bologna, who've yet to win one, but who have a very valuable supporter in Leandro Arpinati, who's later going to become the unelected mayor of Bologna and the head of the Italian FA and build the Dallara Stadium. And who also happens to be the Vice Secretary General of the National Fascist Party. Huh.
A man who's devoted his life to civil service.
Exactly. A public servant, you're absolutely right. And he certainly has an active role to play, so they say in this. But anyway, here's the facts. You're familiar with this story, perhaps. It's a two-legged final to determine who will go through to face the Southern champion.
Supposed to be.
Supposedly, it grows extra legs along the way. So that both sides win their home game, Genoa and Bologna, 2-1. So it goes to a third decisive match. And this is where the problems start.
No away goals back then, younger listeners.
Or penalty shootouts. Although they did have a shootout, but not with penalties.
Because this is la partita delle pistolate, no?
Yeah. So basically, the first one that is held on neutral ground. And according to accounts of that time, black shirts, basically, there's a handful of policemen, but there's a large number of black-shirted kind of fascist supporters who are apparently armed, and they enter the turf and position themselves behind the Genoa goal. Genoa have managed to go 2-0 up in the first half.
Tickets, by the way. Let's be clear on this.
Regular ticket-holding enthusiasts to get a better view.
Sportsmen.
position themselves behind the Genoa goal. Genoa are already leading 2-0. And 16 minutes into the second half, a Bologna shot is tipped wide by the keeper, Giovanni De Pra. A spectator puts it back into play and a grateful Bologna score. Now, the referee, Mauro, I think his name is.
Yeah, Massimo Mauro.
blows for a corner, at which point the spectators decide to take a more participatory role in the thing. So they come on, the game is suspended, I think, for about 15 minutes or so, after which the referee has reconsidered his opinion and given it as a goal.
But he tells the Genoa players that, don't worry, this will be overturned. We'll take this to the Italian Football Federation. It'll be fine.
He's so only going ahead because he thinks to suspend the game will cause problems of public order.
Exactly. So the Genoa players don't protest. They think, yes, we've got this. We're going to be champions.
And they don't protest later on when Bologna apparently yank the goalkeeper out the way with his jersey so Pozzi can score an equaliser. And it finishes 2-2. Anyway, so Genoa go home, think it's all over, but are then told by the Italian FA that the game will be replayed because there were extraneous people on the pitch. No kidding.
There are people on the pitch. They think it's all over.
Okay, so now it goes to game four. This one, Gabriele, is in Turin.
Early morning.
No, that's game five. So game four is in Turin.
It's like an NBA playoff series. <Yeah, laughs>
So game four happens in Turin. It's another draw, 1-1. But the big thing here was that at the station that evening, there are two trains, one with Genoa supporters, one with Bologna supporters. As the Bologna train leaves the station, the people on board open fire with pistols on the Genoa supporters who are still standing on the platform. A couple of them are wounded. Thankfully, nobody any more than that. And this time, Genoa thought, well, definitely Bologna are going to be suspended. I mean, it's all over. Plus, we don't want to play these guys again. I mean, they shot, I think, the brother-in-law of one of the Genoa players. So by all accounts, they then went off on holiday. By now, anyway, it's kind of early July and it's getting pretty hot.
But Bologna is still training, James. still going in. I don't know where they're training at the time. It's not Casteldebole, but they were, you know, still at it, hard at work.
Yeah.
Going for this championship.
Up in the Apennini, probably, or something. Mm. Yeah, in the
fresh. Like a rocky kind of training camp.
So the word, they wait, and there's still no word about this title being given, or at least the northern title being given. But then on the 8th of August, and by now it's properly hot, Genoa are told that the deciding match will be played the next day at an undisclosed location, that they must leave the next day. Get on board this bus. And they hold the final in Milan on the 7th of August, Gabriele. You've been in Milan in August.
Well, you have to play early in the morning. Before
7 a.m. they play this game.
Yeah. I would have been mad to do it later in the day.
Absolutely.
That's why Genoa complained about this. It's just beyond me.
Anyway, so and Genoa lose. Much to everyone's surprise. As you say, they've been off at the beach. Mm. Bologna have been training. And the nefarious Bolognese win the first of their titles. Well, they go on to beat Alba Roma, I think 6-0 or something, and then they take the national title. Genoa never win the title again, so they've been stuck on 9 titles ever since, of the star.
Right, so now, Preziosi, because he's had nothing to do all these years, and he just picked up a history book for the first time, he's launched an appeal, right? Because he wants this title to be reinstated or whatever. Alba Roma, I'm sure, must have... Because remember, this is the idiocy here, right? He didn't actually win the title because there was a whole final to be played, right, against Alba Roma.
Although there were precedents for example, the 14-15 season when the First World War meant that North-South final couldn't be played. They just gave the title to the Northerners anyway. In fact, Lazio won that title back.
Aren't they both titles? Wasn't it Cazale and somebody else? Weren't they co-champions, I think.
Oh, really? Well, I think Lazio are asking for the title of 15 back. So there's a question mark there. But anyway, I mean, what you say...
Simple answer, right? Why don't you go and play Roma, like the real Roma now, for the title, and we can award the 1925 title. And then I will laugh in your face when you lose again. unless you go and try to fix the game like you've done many times in
because
the past.
Because this is what Preziosi is doing, right? He wants, this is like La Decima was to Real Madrid. He this says, is what it is to Genoa.
I would like to be remembered as the president who brought the star for the 10th Scudetto, to Genoa. It would be beautiful. He's actually going to be remembered as the man who did something quite different to the club. I should just point out, by the way, that Bologna, this week after Preziosi making these comments, Claudio Fenucci, the chief executive, saying that, you know, it was completely legitimate, their win in 1925. And I guess if you want to look back, you could probably wonder what happened in the other nine titles that Genoa won. I mean, the first one, it's a national title, but it was four teams playing, I think, wasn't it?
You know, it was three of them were from Turin. And they literally played in one afternoon. This whole thing, even the stuff with the stars, yeah, is just, it's actually even worse in other countries, like in Germany, where you get one, I think, based on, like, if you've won three, you get a certain symbol, and then five, you move up to something else, like freaking Monopoly or something. But in Italy, right, with the stars, that's why, you know, Juventus have three stars, although, again, you could also debate whether they got their third star a little before they should have. Inter and Milan have one star. And on it goes. And this obsession that now all of a sudden he wants to do something to be remembered by other than for crappy toys and having lived up north for 50 years but still talking like his people talk so nobody can understand him. It's just remarkable with this man. He really has no shame.
Mm. And he already is known for a stolen title anyway. And for that, we have to fast forward a little bit all the way to the mid-noughties, James. All right, good to be back in civilization. Eros Ramazzotti there. Nice pick, James.
Yeah.
Nice pick. Okay, so now it's the mid-noughties, eh?
And Genoa are getting promoted back to Serie A for the first time in a decade, James. Thanks to Preziosi and his patronage.
He's bought them, and he's brought in this Argentine striker called Diego Milito.
Yeah.
Who's going to go on and do great things up the road in Milan later on, of course.
Yeah, much later on, after his second spell at Genoa, because his first spell didn't end as he thought it would be. Well, he thought he was getting into Serie A, Jimbo.
Yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves. So it is summer, May 2005, and Diego Milito is Serie B's top scorer. Genoa are top of the league, and they're heading up. They've just got this one last game to play in the season. You know what? It's the easiest fixture possible. They're taking on a Venezia side who've already been relegated and who've been rubbish all season. At this point, everything's great. So basically, Venezia have gone ahead, but Genoa, through the goals of Milito and company, have come back and won 3-2. And it's Saturday, the 11th of June, and they are up in Serie A. Celebrations.
Cesi Cosmi, the manager, probably DJ, which is also what he does in his spare time.
Nice. But then,
prosecutors in Genoa think this is not all above board, James. Because a guy has been stopped in his car coming out of Preziosi's factory in the north of Italy with a bag full of money.
Yep.
And he just happens to be the general manager of Venezia, the opponent that they've beaten to get promoted.
Now,
he also happens to be, I believe he's a restaurateur here in England, who would surface years later in the Telegraph sting that ended up costing, remember the big Sam Allardyce and his pint of red wine and everything?
Yeah, he was involved in that.
Yeah. He's like Zelig. He's everywhere.
Now, I met Pino and he was a very personable chap and he's quite frank about what happened that day.
Another member of the Bald fraternity?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pelatone.
And, you know, from one Pelatino to another, he told me, you know, listen, we were ahead. Yeah, we were favourites to win, but why take a chance? So basically, I mean, I think you made the point before now, Gabriele, that no country in Europe, possibly the world, has more phone taps than Italy does.
No.
If you're in Italy, your phone is being tapped.
At the time,
it is being tapped.
I mean, I don't know if the numbers have changed, but these numbers came out after the Calciopoli scandal, that between 2004 and 2006, there were more wiretaps, authorized wiretaps, in Italy than in the rest of the European Union, the United States, and Canada
put
combined.
Together. You're kidding. Wow. So this is why you get some incredible transcripts. Then somebody was across what Preziosi was doing prior to this game. I don't know how
got
the tip.
Well, no, half-time, James.
Well, no, but before that, there were these conversations where someone from Venezia is on the phone saying, are you going to send flowers to my wife? And there's the reply from the the DS of Genoa. Don't worry about the flowers and wine. There's going to be enough for everybody. So yes. Then the game happens.
It's just your alternate subtext is a swingers club, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
The game happens, James. Venezia take the lead.
Yeah.
And as we've seen, Venezia don't always stick with the plan when it comes to fixing games.
It was the ghost of Tuta.
The ghost of Tuta.
So and then you have this phone call. Go on, sorry.
At halftime, Preziosi gets on the phone where he's like, "Ma che cazzo sta succedendo?" What the hell is happening?
His accent, which is even worse.
Yeah. What are those guys doing? They have scored against us. They are crazy. They made a mistake and scored. And then the guy from Venezia says, "Listen, don't worry. We'll sort it out. Don't worry." They change the goalkeeper and they basically, I don't know what is done, but Genoa then in the second half go ahead.
Pagliara himself goes in goal. So.
goes and wins it. And, you know, 3-2 the final score. But when all this comes to light, not surprisingly, Genoa is sent down to Serie C, another third division, which is kind of mild, really, given what happened. Preziosi doesn't face jail or anything, but he does get a 5-year ban from football. Brilliantly, he arranged for a life-size photo, like a cardboard cutout of himself, to be placed in the stands in his absence.
Yeah.
It's not just that. The fans are obviously angry. They're like, you know, what the hell just happened? We thought we were getting promoted, and now what's happened? And of course, because Preziosi loves making it all about himself, he goes out there and he shouts in his awful, awful voice, "Namala! Namala! Namala!
Namala! Namala! Namala! Namala!"
Which basically means like, I'm not, you know, I'm not giving up. I'm not giving in, right?
They can't trample over the interests of this club, the interests of this family, of my children, yeah. He says.
Yeah, because his idiot son was involved in it too.
Oh, really?
Right? Massimo or whatever his name is?
Matteo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he also he gives his testimony to the official inquiry where he says, "Yeah, I didn't buy the match. I didn't buy the match. I was just stupid."
Io non ho mai comprato questa partita. Io non l'ho mai comprata. Mai. Sono stato stupido.
The explanation for the money.
Yeah.
It's a great explanation.
This is the best part. Mm-hmm. When asked, why are you walking? I think it was 350,000
euros. No, it's 250,000 euros.
Okay, I mean,
quarter of a million euros. in cash.
Yeah. He's saying, well, because we just sold them two players, wasn't it?
Maldonado, I think.
Maldonado.
Yeah. And yeah, well, we just sold them this guy. And this is the down payment, which of course makes sense that you would just take cash in a duffel bag for it. And of course, there's no paperwork, nothing, right? It's just his word. This was his expert. And this is, and you met this guy, right?
Yeah.
And
supposedly they did actually have a form that looked like a contract. And there is also a wiretap of Pagliara ringing Genoa later that day to say, "Oh, I've been stopped by the financial police, but it's all okay. I told them we were buying a player." Anyway, so they went down to City of B,
line he gave you when you spoke to him? Like, did he stick to the story or was he like...
Oh, he was kind of... No, that's the thing. He was completely open. I mean, by then, everybody knew. And like I say, he said, yeah, you know, you could say, why would you do such a thing? You're top of the table. You've got Diego Milito, top scorer, and you're facing a side that's already been relegated at home. Also, it's the bag. Why risk everything for this?
Genoa had won only one of their previous six games.
Oh, really?
As well.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say this was... in doubt, we could understand maybe some kind of nerves setting in.
Why take the chance?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they didn't. And
why take the chance on missing out on promotion when you can get relegated for match fixing?
Anyway, they're back now. They're back now. And this weekend they got beaten 5-0, Genoa.
And it looks like the decision to sack Davide Ballardini was a good one, James.
All right. Well, we'll come on to that. And the latest exploits from Preziosi. Preziosi, by the way, who's had an unfortunate relationship with Genoa managers, because one other aspect of his story, which is extraordinary, I'd forgotten about this, was I wouldn't call it the role he played, but his part in the death on TV of former Genoa manager Franco Scoglio.
Yeah, so Scoglio, il professore, it wasn't after his career had finished as a manager, but he was becoming more of a TV pundit. He was transitioning from one career to the next.
If you don't know this guy Scoglio, he's another one of these people from the deep south who has the difference with him is
Salvini.
It's got nothing to do with that. It's, you know, those people who are just completely unnecessarily pompous. He had some success early in his career as a manager, and afterwards he'd go out and he would lecture the media, talking about how, Well, I took this theme from Nacional Montevideo in 1922 when they played in the Copa Libertadores against Corinthians, because, and he would just go and just talk this absolute nonsense. And people called him the professor. I don't even know if he was really a professor of...
I think he was a school teacher.
Yeah, he was a professor.
But he had success with one club, and I can't think what it was. He'd had a little miracle with a small club.
He found Toto Schillaci. That was his claim to fame.
There you go.
Even though Zeman was the one who got him scoring.
And I thought he did all right at Genoa, too. Like, they had a couple... No?
Yeah, he had a couple of spells at Genoa.
And then he kind of reinvented himself as this guy who would go on in one of the most fun phenomenons in Italy is that every city has local television stations that, you know, they don't have the rights to games or anything, but usually on Mondays, sometimes Tuesdays, they go and they have these 4-hour television shows with a million guests where they just sit and they basically just talk about the local team.
Or shout.
Or often shout. And it's sort of inversely proportional because, like, the smaller the team is, then the more important guests, you'll get the chairman on, you'll get the manager and whatever. And Scoglio's in there, and he's just complaining, and he's every time he just go and criticize the team and the manager. And they have Preziosi on the phone. And already you can tell the character of the two people because Preziosi keeps referring to Scoglio as Scoglio, which is his last name. And Scoglio's like, you need to call me Professor or Dr. Scoglio because I call you Mr. President.
No, no, delle cose. Mi piace confrontarmi su numeri.
Ma non ho bisogno di fare con lei.
Ma non con lei. E allora lei vada per la sua strada e io vado per la mia.
And that's pretty much the last thing he says, no?
Yeah. And then while Preziosi's kind of like barking back at him, tragically, Scoglio has a heart attack on television.
Ah, fans didn't say it's a tragedy with the banner they held up at the Preziosi call my mother-in-law.
Black humour, but Scoglio was quite prophetic because he did say, I will die talking about Genoa, which is exactly what happened.
There's two other wonderful snippets. One of them was this very bizarre game they had against Siena. And we've spoken in the past about the relationship with ultras and clubs and players and how it's extremely unhealthy and how certain presidents really either have no control or don't want to have any control over their own ultras or their players. One of the ugliest scenes I've seen in a long time was some game where Genoa are getting absolutely whipped at home by Siena 4-1. And the ultras somehow, they go and like they're wreaking havoc. They speak to the captain, who was it Maurizio Rossi or whatever?
Marco Rossi.
Yeah. They tell the players to go and take off their shirts because they're not fit to wear them. In amidst this whole freak show, you would expect...
This is during a game, yeah.
Except, of course, the one guy who's not involved is Giuseppe Sculli, who, you know, sort of the God makes them and pairs them.
When we're talking about phone taps, he's the man with the salami phone tap when he was... This is before he was at Genoa, and he was banned for, I think, 2 years because of this.
If I'm not mistaken, he is related
to... His grandfather, I think.
Ndrangheta boss.
We talked about Ndrangheta last weekend.
He's a mob boss. Yeah.
So he basically talks these ultras down, doesn't he?
And then he gets investigated.
Talented player as well, Scully.
For a while, yeah.
Yeah.
But you would expect in a normal country, in like a normal owner says, all right, you know, I'm going to take action against these people. Like maybe I can't ban them from the stadium or whatever, but I'm going to make a statement. I'm going to collaborate with the authorities or whatever. Just the sheer violation, like your own employees were just compelled to do something by your paying customers, like you need to step in. What does he do? Nothing. He just fades into the background. It's like that scene from The Simpsons where Homer disappears into the hedge, right? Because ultimately the guy is also gutless and spineless, among his many other faults.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in addition to getting Genoa relegated to the third division, he also got them disqualified from Europe. Do you remember this a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
When Gasperini got them into the Europa League and basically UEFA looked into the books at Genoa before giving them a license, didn't like what they said and said, actually, we're going to take your Europa League qualification away and we're going to give it to the next team down, which happens to be Sampdoria.
Wow.
Which is, you know, I mean, come on. Campionato di calcio.
You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show.
Well, this season, their campaign took a bit of a knock as they were beaten this weekend by Inter. Inter were busy warming up for their clash with Barcelona. We're actually recording this on Monday, so we're not entirely sure what happens in that game, although we might have a fair old idea. Inter, who are on a run of six straight wins, made this a seventh consecutive victory in front of almost 70,000 fans at San Siro, beating Genoa 5-0. Genoa not even able to score. If you're thinking, how weren't they doing pretty well? And they had that guy, Piontek, who was scoring loads of goals.
Juric is really getting a tune out of him, isn't he, by keeping him on the bench?
So, he hasn't scored since the change of manager. Their manager was Davide Ballardini, who had them almost in the top four.
Pelatino.
Won three of four matches, but then lost one game against Parma. And Preziosi fires him, fires one of the most successful managers they've had in a long while, and replaces him with one of the least successful managers they've had in a long while, a guy with a win percentage of 25%.
Juric was sacked the first time by Genoa a year on this day. No, it's November 5th as we're recording.
And then he was brought back and then sacked again.
Yeah.
And then they brought him back to replace Ballardini. Yeah. And since then, they have had a really tough run of fixtures, to be fair, but they've not gone well at all. And Piontek stopped scoring. No goals at all. He had 9-7 under Ballardini, none in the four since.
Next two games, James, Napoli
and then Sampdoria.
The derby.
Oof.
I should also point out that for Inter, given the Barcelona game was coming up and given that it was around Halloween, you know, he dug deep and he, like, wheeled out a whole bunch of guys.
Yeah, it was their reserves.
Playing
the Champions League.
Yeah, we saw João Mário again.
Dalbert,
Gagliardini. You know, all these guys who were, and he rested, you know, Icardi and Vecino, who for Inter are important. You know, we saw Lautaro expecting God knows what, and he was pretty, he's pretty ordinary. When you win 5-0 and, like, you don't show up, but
Raja came off the bench ahead 5 minutes to go, scored. Yeah. They were mightily impressive.
I sure wonder how that Barcelona game went. Also in action midweek and winning at the weekend were Juventus and Napoli. Juve had a 3-1 victory over Cagliari. They're now officially on their best ever start to a top flight season.
Interestingly, they've matched the best ever start to a season by any team in Serie A.
Okay.
It's Napoli last season, and it was Roma in Garcia's first season. What do those two teams have in common?
They didn't win the title.
They didn't win the title.
Interesting. That is interesting. Do you know who Juve are playing next weekend?
Yeah, they're playing Milan.
Milan also had a win, but only just. My word. 96th, 97th minute, was it? The Romagnoli. Yeah. I mean, it was a lovely. It was extraordinary. Time stood still as he and, was it Bonaventura? Who? They passing the ball back and forth in the.
So it was Castillejo, I think, and Souza. But the thing about this is, if you watch this game, well, first of all, Milan were I thought, really poor again.
This is away at Udinese.
This is away at Udinese. And prior to that, put it this way. It's a good thing Udinese don't really have any fans, because if they did, I think they'd be really entitled to be annoyed. But there was a sequence before this when Kevin Lasagna is on the break. Christian Zapata goes up to try to foul him, you presume.
So there's Lasagna on the counter.
Yeah. Zapata just kind of falls over, and Lasagna keeps going with the ball, and they call the foul the other way, which totally takes all the momentum out. Moments later, Neutink gets sent off for, you know, it was a foul from behind, but it was obviously a trip, not violent. Yeah. And then in the 96th minute, this guy, Opoku, who's not a bad defender, but not the sharpest tool in the box, it's the freaking 96th minute. What you do there, especially given that you're neither Beckenbauer nor Harry Maguire, for that matter, you don't dribble in your own half when you've got two guys in front of you. But that's exactly what he decides to do. So the idiot loses the ball. And then Milan have this counter, this sort of like 5-on-3 counter, where even then, nobody has the bottle to shoot. They must have passed it sideways like 50 times. Yeah. You could tell they're terrified.
It was like Man City,
then,
or something.
Yeah, and then
I think
Romagnoli,
they're in the penalty area for 6 minutes of the 9 minutes of added time.
You're kidding, really?
It was actually Romagnoli who won the ball off Opoku to start the whole thing. Romagnoli, who's becoming sort of like a little Sergio Ramos at this stage. And then eventually, he's got the cojones to go and to shoot and score. And you're happy for him, you're happy for Reno, but
second time in a week, of course, because he did it midweek against Genoa.
All of his last three goals have been in stoppage time.
No way.
Yeah. L'uomo della Champions, as they were calling him afterwards.
Wow.
Yeah?
Just a small aside on Romagnoli. I think he's a special player. He's got flaws that he needs to iron out. But there's two things that, for me, really stand out about him. One is he came through the youth ranks at Roma, while being very actively a Lazio supporter, which shows that you're either the ultimate contrarian or that, you know, you really, really feel it. And secondly, he gave this interview sort of when he first came up, when he first became famous and first started making a name for himself, where, you know, he talked about how, because he's a ball-playing central defender and stuff, he talked about, I think he said his heroes were Nesta and Zidane.
So he carries his number. Yeah.
Right? It was Gazzetta. They put as a headline, like, where they put it in quotes, like, I'm Nesta without the ball, I'm Zidane with it. Which then obviously created, people said, like, who is this freaking lunatic? You know, and to be fair to him, he never actually said that, but it stuck with him a long, long time, and people just mocked him mercilessly.
Also this weekend, Napoli, who host PSG. It's going to be a game with Gigi Buffon between the posts for PSG, apparently.
His ban is over, finally.
Yeah. He's no longer sitting in the stands,
while, actually,
eating his patatine, his futini.
Nice. Anyway, they also had a 5-goal haul against Empoli. 3 goals from Dries Mertens. This was last Friday, wasn't it?
Yeah, every goal from outside of the box.
Is that right?
Yeah, which and I don't think there's... Has there ever been a hat-trick?
So he got 3 all from outside the box. Yeah, okay.
The one thing about that game, which was interesting too, was Carlo Ancelotti, who we're all used to him being cheery and jolly all the time.
Yeah.
He came out and he said, man, we played really badly.
Yeah, Empoli were better than us.
Yeah.
Again, just you look at the players he was using in that game. Like, I mean, the midfield, he had out wide Fabian Ruiz and Rog, nominally out wide. Again, you're just seeing him use pieces that, I mean, sadly did not have Ruiz. But he had these, you know, like Rog, who played his 50th game, I think, at the weekend, but he's hardly ever started any. But Ancelotti's finding a way to make these players not just win games, but win games like 5-1 against Empoli. I think it's damn impressive. Mm. And I mean, Mertens at the weekend, I mean, I think Carlo has, again, just like done a remarkable job of keeping him really keen by by keeping on the bench for quite a while. He's to the point where he's been like fed
same
up.
Same tactic
with it.
Juric is doing, of course, with the Conte. To such effect.
Exactly.
I say Juric, before he went to Genoa, wasn't terrible. He was at Crotone, right?
And
he played great football, got them promoted. I think the problem is, once he went to Genoa and once he started taking Preziosi's money, I think that's when, you know, God and divinity started to go. And then he got this negative karma from Preziosi. And because
he's become just very grey, hasn't he? It's just, you know.
Preziosi's kind of like a Death Eater. So he kind of like sucks the life out of people and turns them into these grey, empty shells.
One bit of good news for Genoa this week. Sampdoria lost 4-1 at home to Torino. Where did that one come from?
Well, Gallo Belotti is the cock is crying again.
It's
been a while.
Torino didn't play like Torino. Or didn't play like Mazzari's Torino.
Well, because Mazzari was in the stands.
Yeah. So for that reason, they said, hey, guys, let's not just sit back and be negative and just lump the ball forward. Why don't we actually kind of exploit the fact that this season our owner actually spent some money and we have players like Baselli who can actually pass the ball forward and not just sideways or backwards all the time. And they did that and they tore up Sampdoria.
Yeah. Mazzari's assistant has one of the best names in football, no? Nicola Frustalupi.
Ah, love a Frustalupi.
Yeah. Mm. The wolf whipper. Yeah.
And, Gab, Chievo update, are they still on negative points?
Of course they are.
All right. And did they do it in spectacularly comic fashion this week? They were playing at home to Sassuolo.
One of the own goals of the season.
Yeah. Oh, where Giaccherini goes and he chests it back to the goalkeeper, Sorrentino, who's on the ground. Yes.
And Berardi gives it a look after. It's like, Berardi, the Sassuolo strikers, just look like, you guys are too funny.
He's cracking up. He's cracking up. I mean, just to show, I mean, for Chievo, like, they brought on this guy, Tanisevic or something, comes on, booked straight away. 4 minutes later, second yellow card, sent off. And then this happens with Giaccherini. I mean,
have they won a game yet under Ventura?
Sventura.
What I don't get about that incident, too, is... Yeah. Okay, so Sorrentino, despite playing for Chievo, is generally seen as one of the good guys because he's very sociable. He's got a great social media account. He does stuff for charity, And Giaccherini, of course, is the original Magic Jack, right? Why was Giaccherini there to go, like, where were the defenders? Mm. And secondly, okay, I get it. You want to chest it to the keeper so the keeper can collect it. But Sorrentino's on the ground. Like, you can see that he's on the ground. Let's have a discussion another time about why he was on the ground. But you can see that he's on the ground. But equally, even though he's on the ground, why doesn't Sorrentino just, like, lift his arms? I mean, he is, like, 6'4", right?
Why?
So, I know, why?
Perché?
Karma, man. One by one, all the bad guys are dropping. We're getting them.
Right.
Preziosi, you're next.
Can we just say what a bad week it was for Roma?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean...
With Batistuta watching in the stands as well.
Batigol watching in the stands. Roma actually, I thought, played very well.
Uh-huh.
But just didn't take their chances. They have a penalty given against them, which, you know, why Orsato doesn't go to the video assistant referee and go and look at the monitor, get a second chance to look at it, I don't know. Because I can see maybe from his position why he was dead set on his sort of decision that that is definitely a penalty. But I think it was a mistake. And Roma managed to get back into it right at the death, 85th minute Florenzi goal. But all of the teams above them who they're competing for a place in the top four win. They're, what, now 5 points adrift. They've still got to play Juventus and Inter before Christmas. Well, Di Francesco didn't speak after the game because Monchi came out and was like basically saying, enough is enough. You know, these penalties that are given against us or not given to us. You know, we never talk about referees. Now's the time to talk about referees.
Roma are currently ninth now. They are 15 points behind Juventus and they are 5 points off Milan, who are in fourth place, and nine behind Inter and Napoli.
Yeah, and you think they're behind Milan on head-to-head as well at the moment because they lost to them at San Siro.
To top everything off, of course, Roma travelled to Florence by train They're an eco-friendly club. And way back, they go to the train station. And of course, because it's impossible to keep a secret around Roma and in Rome, everybody knew what train they were on. So they get there.
They missed the train. That was the thing. They missed the train. They come up and they find themselves on a platform.
With like hundreds of Roma ultras who are just insulting them. And then they're the, but in the end, people, I don't know. Like, it's interesting. Again, with the ultras were totally supportive during the game. But then afterwards, after, you know, what wasn't ultimately a bad result, was it?
No.
I mean, 1-1 draw.
Context of the last two games, they've drawn in Naples and they've drawn in Florence. Now, historically, that's not bad,
is it?
It's
not bad, but yeah, they're unhappy. And then they all rode the train together back to Rome.
Mercenari! But yeah, I mean, I suppose these last two results.
Yeah.
It's hard to quibble, really, with picking up points on the road against Napoli and Fiorentina. I think what's really cost Roma, at least in the league, is their home form. It's been dreadful under Di Francesco. Losing to Spal, being 2-0 up against Chievo and being pegged back to 2-2. Getting in front against Atalanta with that Pastore back heel and then finding themselves 3-1 down and having to basically throw the kitchen sink at them to get back into that game. Those are the ones where you kind of point the finger and say that's why they're behind. Not so because of the Napoli and Fiorentina results.
Roma next weekend, match day 12 of the Serie A season. We'll be hosting Sampdoria. Two teams looking to bounce back there. The key game, though, without question, will be on Sunday evening, 7:30 UK time, as Milan host Juventus. Milan will have a Europa League fixture to deal with midweek. Will that be the return against Betis? Is it back
yes.
to back? Yeah, okay.
Have to see if Higuain, who went off
against Udinese,
I think he will. I think it was just a knee in the back. Just okay. A bit of bad bruising.
We've spoken at length, and there's no time for a proper preview now, but Milan, Juve, any chance you think that Gattuso can derail the old lady?
I think there's every chance.
Really?
Some
chance.
The odd thing with Juve this year is that, and we've seen in the last three games, they drew one, won the other two, but
the Genoa game,
they were never as dominant. This time I thought they played better against Cagliari, but they always have that kind of one half, which is like a stinker, and then they got to come back like against Empoli and whatever else. So I don't know. I think for them, the midweek game against United is so important. It's going to take stuff out of them. And with Milan, you just don't know what you're going to get, right?
Milan have a midweek. I mean, they have to go to Seville basically on Thursday.
They didn't play well against Udinese, but I think one of the mitigating factors there is they've got a lot of injuries. Yeah, Calabria looks like he's going to be out for a long time now. We've hardly seen him play in defence. Bilia is out for until.
That's okay. Montolivo's back.
Bonaventura is out. That's an issue for them. But I'm with Gab on this. I think if Juve is as tired as they were after the last United game, with Higuain back fit and wanting to prove something.
I'm with you. The other thing, too, is when people complain about all the injuries and whatever, this is still a big squad.
Yeah.
Like, with all the injuries they've had, they also still have Montolivo, who, you know, is obviously an unusual situation with his contract and whatever, but he's still there. He's still a guy who was playing for Italy until a little over a year ago. Jose Mauri, remember when we thought he was amazing?
Under Donadoni, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't Bertolacci still knocking around there somewhere? Mr. 30 million, right? Bakayoko, who might not be very good, but he was really good 3 years ago. So
Gattuso said Bakayoko's really good as long as we don't pass him the ball.
There you go.
I think, you know, that's
but that's what I mean. It's like, it seems that, like, you know, it's like he's complaining about the injuries, but you have another half dozen guys who are there in your team who Leonardo figured were worth keeping around. Freaking use them, right? Yeah. Don't make Kessié play every minute of every game in perpetuity, because as we're learning about Kessié, is the more he plays, the worse he becomes. Mm. You know.
Well, that sounds good.
And Ibra's coming, James.
And Ibra's coming. We'll see. That's the situation then after 11 rounds of this exciting Serie A season. We'll be back with more next week. Hope you have a super time until then. Gabriele Marcotti, many thanks for today.
It's a pleasure.
And you, James Horncastle. For now, from all of us here, it's arrivederci. Campionato di calcio italiano. You've been listening to Galazzo, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and make sure you check out our other podcasts this season. The Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker and the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.